You're listening to KTRU on 96.1 KTRU, LP Houston, streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. I'm Rashad Kathari, and you're tuned into Thinking Different. Listen ahead for a special pre-recorded interview with a guest from the Texas Medical Center. The COVID-19 pandemic has clearly brought significant changes to our lives, from the way we work to even the way we interact with our friends and loved ones. It has also influenced how healthcare is delivered to patients in some very unique ways through greater adoption of telemedicine services. I'm delighted to speak today with Dr. Zvonimir Krasier, the Director of Peripheral Vascular Diseases at Texas Heart Institute. In addition to his clinical duties, he also trains physician scientists and interventional cardiologists. Dr. Krasier, thank you so much for joining me today.
You are welcome. It's my pleasure to be a guest to this program. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, great. We're happy to have you. So, Dr. Krasier, before we delve a little deeper into the role of telemedicine in today's environment especially, could you please speak to your background and what motivated you to pursue interventional cardiology?
Well, I'm an interventional cardiologist at Texas Heart Institute and CHI Health, Baylor St. Luke's Medical Center here in Houston, Texas. I'm also Program Director of Peripheral Vascular Intervention at Texas Heart Institute and Clinical Professor of Medicine in Cardiology at Baylor College of Medicine. I've been practicing medicine and cardiology in Houston since 1975 and have been involved in the interventional field, obviously, for many decades. So I have a special interest related to patient care and advances in medical field, and now I believe is the most appropriate time to use the latest advances in digital medicine with this COVID-19 epidemic that's forcing us in a way to practice medicine in a different way than we have been practicing before.
Right. And, you know, this is a sentiment that seems to be shared by most providers. So I'm curious, how has the COVID-19 pandemic changed the way you practice and the way you teach your residents and students?
Well, there is no doubt that COVID-19 is a disruptive effect and has caused major effect on healthcare services. It's a new pandemic with enormous impact on the hospitals and specialists, intensive care units, staff, and equipment. And obviously, we had to change. We were forced to change our mindset, how to offer safe patient care. And one of the ways to do it is virtual patient visit via telemedicine, which has become a necessity during COVID-19 epidemic. Another positive thing is, as far as telemedicine is concerned, the technology is rapidly developing with new wearables and new implantable devices that offer us improved patient care.
Absolutely, and it seems that these wearable devices are now a very big part of telemedicine. But you know, telemedicine may comprise more than just wearable devices. What is under the umbrella of this telemedicine term?
Well, let me say that telemedicine exists for decades, but it has never been embraced to a significant degree until COVID-19. And now, as far as information related to telemedicine, we actually prefer nowadays to call it digital health, because it's not just being able to communicate with the patient, but you are able to do much more than what telemedicine offered to us and our patients at the very beginning. Digital health is a convergence of digital technologies with healthcare delivery using information and communication solutions to advance and address health conditions. Now, technology may be software or hardware solutions or services, including things like telemedicine, text messages, wearable devices, remote monitors and sensors, and web-based analysis. It is more broadly including also genomics, artificial intelligence, machine learning analytics, and mobile applications. We can also say that the focus of digital health is to interconnect physiologic parameters that are identified outside of the traditional hospital or clinical visit, which can enhance the perception and therefore personalization of healthcare delivery for patients. And this is particularly true for those with chronic conditions that need continuous medical care.
Right, so this would be something like monitoring the blood pressure or the heart rate of a patient who needs to be maybe consistently monitored at the home.
That is correct. As a matter of fact, it's much more than that. And this has happened within the last few years, but actually it's evolving on a daily basis. I did mention implantable devices. I did mention wearable devices. There are also so-called attachable devices, such as you could connect a device, and several of them have been approved for clinical use and cleared by FDA, where you can actually record an EKG instantaneously, transmit it telephonically through a cloud and directly to the patient as a physician that takes care of that particular patient. But also, that particular device can function as a stethoscope. It means you can listen to the heart sounds, you can place it over the chest and listen to the lungs and the many other structures such as carotid artery flow or arterial flow in the lower extremities. So it is very, very, very rapidly expanding with many, many different devices and many technologies that have been evolving within the last few years. So not only that we can record an electrocardiogram, whether it's one lead or two lead, or in the near future even a 12 lead, but we'll be able to, and we are able at the present time, to record the respiratory rate, temperature, oxygen saturation, coughing frequency, and many other things. So it is becoming really a multi-modality testing device that physicians can use on long distance basis to stay in touch with his or her patients.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that telemedicine has been around for a long time, and now digital medicine, it seems to be taking off within the last maybe few years. Do you think that there was some reluctance before the COVID-19 pandemic to really fully integrate these services into healthcare because people still had the perception that having a real-life human physician would always be superior to using technologies like this?
So there are obviously multiple factors that play a role.
Right.
Number one is there was reluctance from the patient's point of view. There was also, to a certain degree, reluctance from the physician's point of view because there was an issue of liability. If you establish a diagnosis via long-distance communication that might be inaccurate, you might be liable and responsible for patients' problems or complications that could occur. There is also an issue, or was an issue, of HIPAA compliance, which is Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act that was introduced in 1996. So we're 24 years since this introduction. Before that, there was a significant liability. And another important factor is that there were no billing codes available for charging for certain professional services. At the present time, we have multiple billing codes, whether this is just a regular telephone call, whether it's an audio-visual call, whether it's an extensive call or short call, you can now charge for 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 20 minutes or a longer communication with a patient, which encourage providers to get engaged in this type of services. But also, the technology was not there as far as all the wearables are concerned that are available at the present time, and that also gave us an opportunity to do really more complete patient evaluation.
I see. And I'm glad that you mentioned HIPAA, which is a law that governs the security or the privacy of patient information. A question that I had, and perhaps many people wondering about digital health have, is can we guarantee that all of the wearables, all of the implantable devices, all of these adhere to HIPAA and that we can be sure that patient information will be secured at all times? Or is there still concern in some devices for establishing the security of that information?
Well, that is very important and very pertinent question. The first thing that's important is for any wearable or implantable devices to be approved by FDA. That's number one. And number two is that also CMS approves the use of certain codes for certain wearable or implantable devices. And then we have to have a safe way how to store data. And that is also very important factor, because if that data is not appropriately and safely stored, then there is a HIPAA compliance issue that could be of great concern. So all of those things have to be addressed before we proceed. Another important thing is that there are many ways how you could communicate with your patient, and we have to make sure that either audio or visual or both communication is HIPAA compliant and safe and protective as far as patient is concerned. So there are many, many different programs. One of them that we use very frequently is so-called Doxy.me, but it could be due to the oximetry that can be used, and many other ones that can be used and offer pretty reliable communication and safe communication with the patient. There are certain ways of communication, such as FaceTime, that are not HIPAA compliant, so we should shun away from this particular application when we communicate with our patients.
Right, and it seems to me that patients would actually probably be more comfortable using services like FaceTime or Skype, for example. So is it difficult in your experience to ask patients to use these HIPAA-compliant platforms instead, or has there been really no issue with patients being able to access and utilize those services?
Well, there are issues, obviously. Number one, the patient has to have a device that they can use and that's compatible with the services that we can provide. So a lot of elderly individuals might not have smartphones or might not have a computer, or they have an outdated desktop or laptop, and the information cannot be recorded adequately. They might not have cameras on their phones or on their laptop or desktop devices for the visual component. Now, there are certain programs that are a little bit more complex and cumbersome. We find that, for instance, that Doxy.me is probably the easiest one to use, and it can be used with a variety of smartphone devices. So I feel like most of the individuals should be able to do it, but some of them, obviously, particularly elderly, are not savvy as far as using smartphones or using computer technologies, and they certainly are reluctant, and we see this relatively frequently in elderly individuals, where they will actually ask us, well, let's just communicate via telephone and not to use any of those programs because they feel very uncomfortable. I think the time will change, and I think we need to educate our patients. So what I would encourage the providers to talk to their patients at the time of the clinical office visit, ask them specific questions. If they have smartphones, if they have laptops or desktops, and if we could communicate in future, and if they need any guidance and provide that guidance to them, I think this is one of the ways how we can encourage broader application of this technology.
I see. So it seems there are many factors that need to be worked on in order for these technologies to really stick and for them to stick on both sides, you know, the physician adoption of these technologies as well as the comfort of patients from various
right.
backgrounds using these technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to pivot just a little bit, I was also interested in getting your take on the feasibility of these technologies past the COVID pandemic. So the changes that we've adopted so far in digital medicine, do we expect them to stay after the end of the pandemic? Or do you think that we will go back to a quote-unquote normal or a pre-COVID environment in which perhaps the application of these technologies was to a lesser extent than it is now?
I think the technology that we mentioned, particularly the wearables and implantables, are definitely here to stay because they will serve a very important role. Of course, they're extremely important now at the present time of COVID-19 epidemic because we are really limited in being able to communicate well with our patients, and we need certain parameters to follow to know if the patients are at risk and what are their problems. And particularly in cardiac patients, probably this is more important than any other scenario, where we have to know what is their heart rate, what is their temperature, what is their respiratory rate, if they have any arrhythmias, atrial fibrillation, how the blood pressure is, and all of those factors. But even after COVID-19 epidemic, in all of those patients that we follow on a regular basis with heart failure, with arrhythmias, with structural heart disease and heart murmurs and aortic and mitral valve and tricuspid valve disease, they will need those wearables. We will have to follow them closely. And I believe that this is going to stick and stay with us and actually become more and more important. I think that COVID-19 was a catalyst to really promote, in a way, telemedicine or digital medicine and digital applications and those wearables, and that actually we will see resurgence of telemedicine and digital cardiology in particular with those applications. There will be other fields as well, whether it's respiratory medicine or gastrointestinal or endocrinology, that will also embrace those technologies and make it popular among their patients.
I see, and it's interesting you mentioned that because it seems then that the way we train budding physicians may have to change so that they become more comfortable with using digital medicine as part of their everyday practice in the future.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the American College of Cardiology, for instance, has a separate section on digital cardiology and telemedicine and is educating physicians, young and older ones, how to use digital cardiology and digital medicine. So I think this is going to be one of the prerequisites in education of young physicians to learn about it, to learn about artificial intelligence in medicine and how to use it in the most appropriate way to help our patients with a variety of acute and chronic conditions.
Wonderful. Now, not to be a pessimist, but I'm also curious about this. Do you think that there are certain fields in medicine that maybe the application of digital technologies or digital medicine applications is inherently difficult?
Well, there are certain fields where it might be really challenging. I would say cardiology is perfectly suited for the use of digital cardiology and the use of wearables, attachables, implantables, and so on. But you could imagine a lot of surgical specialties might not be able to use this to the maximal extent. So obviously that has yet to be evaluated further to see if some other technologies can be used to establish a diagnosis in certain surgical conditions. Of course, certain things exist. For instance, take an example, identifying the temperature and the heart rate and the blood pressure and so on might be useful in surgical field as well, identifying infections or any other problems that might be related to recent surgery. But obviously further testing and further evaluation is needed, particularly in some other surgical fields where the diagnosis might be difficult to establish with anything that we have available at the present time.
I see. So another point of discussion regarding telemedicine as well as digital medicine is the fact that Houston, and really the Houston environment, is known for not only adopting newer technologies rapidly, but also being a leader in innovating them. So, you know, we have organizations like TMCX or J Labs. What kinds of products have you seen really take off recently as a result, maybe, of the COVID-19 pandemic? Are there specific technologies that seem to almost thrive in this environment that calls for almost exclusive use of digital medicine to deliver healthcare?
Right. So if we expand this conversation a little bit further into the field of interventions, for instance, identifying problems and using artificial intelligence in preventing complications, then we could talk about, for instance, a device that was developed here in Houston, as a matter of fact, at Texas Heart Institute. The name is Early Bird, and it's a bleeding monitoring system. It's a very innovative, disruptive technologies. It's implantable, but it's implantable in a temporary fashion. It means during the procedure. The catheter, or what we could call it a sheath, is inserted into the vein, and it's monitoring any bleeding that might be occurring due to manipulation of the catheters or devices through the arterial system that is in close proximity of this particular sensor. This has tremendously helped us during many interventional procedures because what we call vascular complications or bleeding after interventional procedure or during the interventional procedure could be life-threatening. And actually, it can increase mortality threefold. That is clearly evident in the literature, and prolong hospital stay at least twofold, and can increase healthcare costs for over 60%. And then it could become really life-threatening if you would get what we call a retroperitoneal bleed, bleeding in the abdomen. Some of this could be insidious or slow developing, and it might not be clearly evident to professional eye until it might be too late. So this particular device, Early Bird, or we call Serranos, has been developed with that purpose in mind at Texas Heart Institute to recognize this problem. And the testing was done, obviously, in animal lab and then through a clinical trial with excellent results as far as specificity is concerned, particularly for major bleeding where the sensitivity was 100% of being able to identify severe bleeding. And this can then alert physician actually before the problem becomes serious that there is a problem, and then you can correct it. And actually, in this particular study, it was extremely helpful for physicians that were involved in the procedures to learn that there is a problem and to correct it. So there were no major, major complications that occurred because this device functioned so well and alerted us early enough about the problems that might be happening.
Outstanding. So it seems that digital medicine is applicable not only to monitoring, you know, patient parameters for chronic diseases, but also perhaps for acute changes in the patient's health.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And another application where I see that it's going to be, and this is truly futuristic, and this has not been done to a great extent, but I have no doubt that it will be available in the near future on almost, I would say, routine basis. And you've heard about robotics. So robotics at the present time are being used for a variety of procedures, whether it's gastrointestinal, whether it's gynecological, whether it's cardiac, and interventions, coronary interventions, peripheral interventions, and so on. Typically, what is happening is a physician is in the room at a certain distance, maybe a few feet, or maybe 10 or 15 feet away from the patient, guiding robotically catheters and a variety of other devices through the patient's body to achieve a certain treatment modality and result. Now, this at the present time is in evolution, and if we can overcome some obstacles as far as liability is concerned, it will be done remotely as well. So it means that some physician here in Houston can perform procedure that is being done somewhere else with assistance either of a junior physician or even a technician to assist during the interventional procedure. This has been already done in some other countries such as India and a few other countries where there is less risk of liability. But I think that once we overcome that issue and prove the validity of this approach, it will be also done in the United States on a routine basis. But beyond that, what is going to be very important is that we are going to be using digital medicine and artificial intelligence in supervised learning of physicians elsewhere, also remote procedural guidance, and very likely credentialing and recredentialing physicians for certain procedures. So this will be all done with machine learning and advancement in artificial intelligence, I believe, in the very near future.
Well, that is very, very exciting, and it's a little difficult to imagine currently. But as you mentioned, things change very quickly in digital medicine, and it's possible that we see this before we expect to see this.
Right.
Well, Dr. Crazier, in the last few minutes that we have, I'd love to hear one lofty goal you have for the implementation of digital medicine in cardiology.
Well, I just mentioned to you what I'm hoping, that we'll be able to do this as far as education is concerned for physicians in training. I think it's going to be very important. And physicians that are in remote locations, this is my goal, because I think that technology exists in the present time. We have mega computers such as Watson, IBM. There are other mega computers. Stanford University has a mega computer. Those mega computers can read even better than an experienced professional scientist certain tests such as chest X-ray, a lot of CAT scans. We have now digital medicine so advanced that actually a novice can perform an echocardiogram with guidance of digital medicine and correct the position of the probe that might not be appropriate, or guide the novice in positioning the probe where it's adequate, sampling the images, measuring everything, and giving the final interpretation, which means that this might be extremely important in scenarios in remote locations where expert echocardiographers are not available, particularly now during the COVID era, where actually we have limited staff, and where maybe nurses can be performing those tests, performing echocardiograms and ultrasound, and getting immediate information on patients' well-being or problems that are happening. Now, I see that this will probably gain more popularity, and therefore digital medicine is going to take over some of the jobs and responsibilities that are currently obligating physicians to do. And that does not necessarily mean that the physicians will be out of profession and out of job. I think that this is going to give the opportunity to physicians to spend more time with their patients and leave maybe more menial type of job or task to the computers and the digital technologies that exist.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Dr. Crazier, that was an absolutely fascinating discussion. Thank you for sharing your insight into how digital medicine continues to change the way healthcare is delivered. It was a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Rishabh. It's my pleasure.
Hey, Dr. Zvonimir Crazier, an interventional cardiologist and the director of peripheral vascular diseases at Texas Heart Institute at the Texas Medical Center. That's it for today. Join me next time on Thinking Different for more conversations with leaders in the Houston community pursuing unique solutions to complex problems. I'm Rishabh Kothari.